From Calvary Church of Santa Ana, this is the Calvary Life Podcast, the show where we share stories, tell jokes, and have discussions about faith, life, and God with people from Calvary Church. Here are your hosts, Eric and Matt.
All right, welcome to another episode of the Calvary Life Podcast. Eric Wakeling here.
And I'm Matt Davis. And we are here with who?
We have a special guest. Maybe you could just kind of give us a glimpse of who you are. Oh! Any guesses, everybody out there?
Hard times in the city just don't go away. I hear the anger and frustration. My name's not Johnny Cash now.
No, we got our good friend Mike Stan with us.
And you said good friend. Hello. Hi, guys.
That's right.
Eric, Matt.
There's just one of us here, but okay. Yeah, just one Matt.
We're used to there being several Matts in a Calvary church.
There's several Matts. Yes. Matt's everywhere. Matt's in the doorway.
It is good to have you here, Mike.
That's great to be here, to be able to share with you guys and to be a part of this.
Nobody's ever had an intro like that, too, by the way.
Well, that's fantastic. First for everything. That could be good. No edits, right?
No.
That's right.
Go for it. Go for it.
Yeah, so, you know, Mike, as we know, you're a Calvary Church member. People
Indeed.
Have probably seen you playing guitar on stage during worship.
Or something,
yeah, or at some other thing of some sort.
Yes. But,
or seen you around.
The guy it could be like Light the Night, right?
That's
or if
right.
we've ever done like a bluegrass kind of worship
oh,
on Sunday
yeah.
morning. We love that.
Digging that. And recently, in front of the Christmas tree lighting, played
That's
a little jazz
right.
guitar.
That's
Jingle
right.
Bell Rock, yeah.
That's right. So the cool guy in a leather jacket, maybe, with the cuffed jeans. That's who you're.
Yeah. Like you. I see you got hair like mine now.
I used to, more and more, man. I used to be.
We're
cool.
converting you.
I got to do
Beard's
something.
Beard's got to go next, man.
All right.
It is.
I love it. We want to talk to you just about your life and things you've done. You've done some pretty interesting things, but how did you start at Calvary? What's your Calvary sort of origin story?
Well, you know, I came to Calvary first not being a member. A friend of mine brought me in the, dare I say, the 70s.
Oh.
I don't think even Samzik was here. Samzik Chapel was even here, but just grass in between.
Oh, wow.
And so I knew some girls here and before my wife. And I just remember coming here, and that was a neat place. And then it wasn't until 1982 that I came back.
Okay.
For an event called The Door.
Ah.
When Lyle Cassilaw and Ray Schwartz were youth pastors here. We just started the Altar Boys, and they came out to visit us on like our third gig, and we came here and played The Door at our fifth gig here, approximately 1982.
Okay. Wow!
And he was trying to explain to me The Door and the whole origin. I'm like, well, I don't. Okay, we'll find out when we get there. And we got here. It was pretty amazing.
Yeah, because a lot of people probably do know about The Door, but
exactly.
I bet a lot of people don't know about The
exactly.
Door.
Exactly. So
or we know of The Door. But
of The Door.
If yes. you go in The Door, what happens at The Door?
Well, it was usually on a Friday night after a football game, mm-hmm. Orange or Foothill, some of the local high schools. And for $5 approximately, maybe, I don't remember, you get all the pizza and Cokes you could drink, whatever.
Yeah.
And they have bands, they have games, they have giveaways, they have Smash the Car. And it was just like anywhere from 600, I think the most was about 800 or 900 kids here on a Friday night after the football games.
Wow,
so
crazy.
They continue that into early 90s.
Okay.
And then things gradually changed. We were part of that several years. I know in 82 and 84, 85.
So you're in a band, and you were in a band then called the Altar Boys, which is, if people don't know, I mean, they should know, this was like a... Altar Boys were a hugely, I think, influential band into the world of Christian punk rock music, and then even beyond. For me, like, if I could just share, like...
You can share.
For me...
Go ahead.
This was maybe a little later, more like 88, I think, when I first saw the Altar Boys.
Yes.
Because for me, that was when I was, like, in eighth grade.
Gotcha.
Okay.
Enough said. I get it.
You transitioned.
Remember, I was here in the 70s.
You were done with Salty the Songbook, and then it was time for something
new. I'm a late bloomer.
But for me, I remember... What I thought Christian music was and this is no offense to these other things, but was like Sandy Patty, Amy Grant, like the stuff my parents were listening to, right?
Sure.
Or even just kind of gospel music,
of course,
and stuff like that. And so then I remember then hearing Altar Boys, and I was blown away, thinking like, this is the cool music that doesn't matter if it's Christian or secular or whatever. Right. This is just like, well, I love how the name of the album, Gut Level Music, because that was such a good descriptor, yes, I think, of what your music was like.
Exactly. Yeah. And we'd started the band, and the reason we wanted to share the good news of Christ through music we thought was relevant, music we liked.
Yeah. Yep.
And it kind of, you know, our thing was just, hey, if we could play Calvary Costa Mesa on a Saturday night and maybe have a record, that would be great. And it kind of took off on its own, and it's amazing what God did. And he landed us here. And in several things, I did several things on Sunday nights here when they have Sunday night at Samzik with Lyle Castle. And I would come here, you know, once a month and have lunch with Lyle through the 80s. And then in 1989, we were in the process of changing churches.
Okay.
And a gentleman by the name of Juan Casas.
Yeah, I know Juan really well.
Yeah.
Totally.
And invited us to come here. We didn't have a church at the time, and we really needed a church. I was on tour constantly, so it was really hard for me to plug in, especially in 88. I was gone 6 months out of the year. Wow. And plus, I did a solo record in between. So it was really a tough year for me. So sometime in 1989, early 1989, we were invited in 88 by Juan, became 89. Then immediately, Larry Frenzel.
Oh, yeah.
Larry Frenzel, who was a large part of the church, I don't know, he just got a hold of me and just was persistent in me joining their shepherd group. And we were part of their shepherd group for about 10 years. I think we became a member in 1990. Just immediately we felt at home here. Immediately we felt a connection, my wife and I. Even though I was out of town a lot, she would attend here, and we had a home church.
That's great.
And at the time was Pastor Dave Hawking, and he was really supportive of what we were doing and really understood what we were doing. As a matter of fact, many times we would tour into some different cities where he would be like the week before. It was really odd. We didn't plan it. And he would meet some promoters, and he'd say, yeah, Mike's coming through here next week at the Altar Boys. You're going to like them. It was very interesting the way that worked. He was very supportive of what we were doing, and we felt at home here right away and felt we had found a home church. And that was 30 years ago, and you still haven't got rid of us yet. I'm expecting the doors to be locked any time. Don't let him in today. We had enough of him.
Right. We love you, man. We love having you.
Yeah, like a sore toe.
That's wild, though. So you first started coming to Calvary. Well, first experience with Calvary was coming and playing at the door.
Yes.
You know, and so, but you got to know some of the pastors and people like that.
Yeah, particularly Lyle and Ray.
And Ray, yeah.
And Ray. And Lyle became, we had a little, I want to call it, accountability group.
Oh, cool,
And Lyle was a part of that in the early 90s or so.
Okay.
So, yeah, and, you know, we had no intention of coming here. We were part of another church.
Right.
And then we decided we needed to change. And, I mean, immediately Calvary was very supportive. Our shepherd group was very supportive of what we were doing. And we needed that because I was gone a lot, and it was difficult. Mm. Those days were difficult.
When you actually, like, are in town and you're at church, what is it that you need? Like, you're on the road and you're pouring yourself out in ministry, but what is it that you're hoping to find when you come to church every once in a while?
Well, at the time, I think what I was just looking for was support and prayer. Because it was tough being out there, especially at that late 80s and early 90s, where I wasn't 20-something years old anymore, and it was like the reality was hitting that this is tough and this is what I want to do. So I wanted to find that structure, and especially for my wife, too.
Right, you're trying to start a family and stuff, too, right? Or, I mean, just at least marriage.
Well,
not kids yet, but...
Exactly. So, you know, we found that here. Hmm. We found that in the Shepherd Group. We found that... all the way around, people understanding what I was doing, and hey, Mike, you know, you guys playing and just supporting me on that. Hey, I'm praying for you, and it was a wonderful sense of community. Oh, I needed that. I needed that structure.
I bet
I needed that foundation.
And I bet that's pretty universal. Even though you are in a unique situation, I bet the sales guy, you know, or woman, feels some of that same thing. Needs that support and
we didn't have that for a number of years. We didn't have that. We were out on our own, so kind of taking it on our own. And it took its toll on me. Hmm. It really, really did. By the end of the 80s, I'd about had it.
Yeah,
it was hard. Yeah. So when I came here, it really revitalized me to have a group of people that I could look to and just say, you know, here's what's going on. Will you pray for me? And to be honest, I hadn't had that.
Mm-hmm.
And it was great to find that, to be able to have that in my life, that structure.
I think the assumption is that you're in a Christian band on the road playing at all these places, singing songs about Jesus, and your spiritual life is just dead on, and you are riding this high with Jesus.
Like you said, that's the assumption.
That is the assumption. So what is it like? How do you stay a Christian? And so I know not everybody's in a band and going, but we have lots of people that are traveling all over the country and business.
Be honest, by the grace of God, I don't know exactly how we did it.
Hmm.
I mean, like I said, 1988, we were gone 6 months out of the year, and I made a solo record. And I was $10,000 in the hole by the end of the year.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, the reality hit. Mm-hmm. And, God, you know, like I said, when I came to Calvary in 89, I needed that. Mm-hmm. I needed that support for my wife and I. We got it here. Like I said, we got it here. We really, really did. And you've had us here ever since.
That's right.
I already said that once, didn't I?
No, that's fine. So why'd you start a band in the first place back in the day?
Well, back in the day, for us, you know, when I came to the Lord in 1980, or I like to say when Jesus accepted me, you know what I mean? People, you know, when he, yeah, it really, really is. That's what it's all about, at least in my mind. You know, it's God saving me. I gave him everything, my music, and within a couple years, I was thinking, you know, I want to share what I have, and there was a great movement going on, different bands called Lifesavers and Undercover and different groups,
right?
And I became friends with these guys. My brother was drummer for the Lifesavers, early punk Christian group. I said, you know, I think I can do that. I don't know if the Lord's called me. I'm gonna try and see what happens. And before we know it, when we started the Altar Boys, I was looking for a lead singer, we were looking for a songwriter, and we were looking for someone to be the spokesman. And we interviewed people and tried people, and we couldn't find anybody. So by default, I took on that role. Oh, I didn't want to be the songwriter. I didn't want to be the lead singer. I didn't want to be the spokesman of the group. And like I said, we just had small intentions. Hey, we just get out and share the word wherever. I was looking at our calendar from 1983 to 82. We were playing an average of 10 times a month. Wherever, any place, for whatever amount, whatever we did, you know, that's what we did. And, you know, before you know it, you take small steps in your life along the way, and we just took small steps. Before we knew it, we were out here with four records, and like, so we were just doing it. We were just constantly, and at the time, I didn't realize, and it still kind of blindsides me, how important this group was to so many people. And we were just doing it in the thick of it, in the middle of it, you know what I mean? Trying to get from this airport to that airport, from that gig to this gig, this album to that album, trying to hold it together, keeping our spiritual lives together, being evangelistic, writing new songs, trying to be a good dad or a good husband, trying to, you know.
Yeah.
And you don't see or feel that as much while you're in the thick of it as you do now, like years later, right? You can look back on that.
I can look back on it now. But towards the early 90s, the reality was starting to hit. This is tough. I need help. And that, like I said, that's why I knew it when coming to Calvary. I knew I needed that support and that structure, and I found it here.
But even the blessing of getting to hear from people now today, that you were impacting then, like even not having a huge sense of that while you're in the middle of it.
Didn't have a huge sense, and I still am I'm kind of, lack of a better term, blindsided by it. I didn't realize the impact that my songs, our ministry have. I really didn't. I really honestly didn't. I just, you know, went out there and did it and was thankful for whatever God gave me and gave us to do. Yeah.
I know there's some other projects and bands in kind of the middle between the main kind of Altar Boys season, and then now we'll talk about the stuff.
Sure, no problem.
We'll talk about the stuff now, but not yet.
That's no problem.
There was Clash of Cymbals, which I actually really liked a lot of that music.
So did I.
Okay, cool. and then the whole Altar Billies thing,
right?
It's like more new. But when did you sort of like start like maybe settling, quote unquote, settling down a bit? When did you get like a job?
Well,
a,
you,
a real
good,
job?
That's a good story.
People say get a real job to me,
too. That's a good story.
Okay,
that's
okay.
a good story because approximately in spring of 1990, I was packing T-shirts for $5 an hour, and I had about six records out. Wow. And I thought, how many do I have six? I had two solo records, four or five Altar Boys. I go, this is not good.
Yeah.
And so it was in the summer of 1998. I said, Lord, I got to do something. I guess I got to go back to school. I went back to school and started my education and finished that in 1993.
Okay.
And then...
And that was in? Like, what did you study?
I studied liberal studies at Cal State Fullerton and minored in music. I was told not to major in music because I'd never get a job. And then as soon as I got out, I got emergency teaching credential and just started subbing. I had to make some money.
Right.
Well, at the same time, I was also, when I decided to go back to school, still playing and still writing, I also was getting a lot of, doing a lot of summer camps and winter camps and camps for people. And that was really helping me out a lot financially. Not a lot.
Is that like doing worship stuff or is that?
I worship stuff. I travel to Wisconsin or Texas or in California.
Okay.
Winter camps at Lake Forest or Forest Home, a lot of those, two at the same time.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah. And a lot for Calvary here. I think I was a member at the time. So, while at the same time going to school, while at the same time kind of doing Clash of Cymbals and flying, and I would study in an airplane. Eventually, I got my BA and started emergency credentialing for Garden Grove, teaching Irvine, and I landed a full-time job in music that I never thought I would get a job in because I was told never to major in it in 1996.
Okay. Wow.
And I've been at Santa Ana Unified School District ever since, got my master's in 2008. And eventually got two teaching credentials.
Wow. So what does your normal day look like? What kinds of things are you teaching? What age level are you teaching?
I teach elementary music at two schools in Santa Ana Unified. I have to land at 7:30 where I usually have 40 kids waiting for me to tune all their violins and get all instruments ready. So my starts at 7:30. Most teachers come in and they're getting their books ready and in line for the class at 8:10. Mine starts at 7:30 in the morning usually. Oh, I land and they're like, where have you been?
With beginning violin players.
And they're great. I got a terrific job. I got terrific kids. I mean, it is great. They know I like rockabilly, and they know. So if they don't behave, I threaten to play some Elvis Presley. No, don't do it. No. Here I go, guys. That's all right, mama. No. Stop.
So good.
Can you imagine like 7:30 in the morning and he's your teacher? That'd be so fun.
I love it. I love it.
And the room's just filled with kids and there's music and it's great. And it's my chance to greet the kids in the morning because this really is my ministry.
Absolutely.
Working with these kids.
Yeah.
Because they come in the morning. First thing they see is, oh, this is me. So I get, oh, poor kids. I always say, you poor kids, you're stuck with me. So I get a chance, I tune their violin, so how you doing? What's up? And I can tell when a kid's having struggles or what's going on. That bad morning. Yeah, I'm sorry, man. I hope it goes better for you.
Mm.
And so I feel that I'm teaching more than just music, that I'm this is my ministry to help these kids and to give them a purpose in life. I believe with a small s that music can save kids. I really, really believe that.
Mm.
Yeah.
So,
well, and you have that face that's going to, I read something even just with parenting that when kids come downstairs for that first look at their parents in the morning, that's going to set the tone for their
day. It really,
really
is.
And a lot of them aren't getting that face time with their kids. And so they come and they see you and you get to be the face of Jesus for them. It's awesome.
When I say, but I have my days and I tell the kids, Mr. Sorrell, he's not feeling real good today. I'm sorry, you guys, but I let them know. Okay,
yeah.
Because it's not fair that you guys don't know if I don't feel good or whatever. And that's not very often.
Yeah.
Most of the time I'm greeting them, I'm happy to see them. And you know, I have a great job. I'm very, very fortunate. I work hard. It's a lot of work. I work hard today, every day. But that's what I'm paid to do.
Well, you do work hard if you also listening to beginner strings.
I have earplugs too. Don't kid yourself. I wear earplugs a lot. I won't lie.
Do you get to wear like your leather jacket, jeans kind of outfits when you teach, or do you?
Depends on how I'm feeling that day.
Okay, okay, okay. You got to kind of dress
always
the part.
Always my cowboy shirt with the snaps. I know that.
Oh yeah, that's true.
Yeah, you know, kids go. Are like, you got your cowboy shirt with the snaps. Of course, got to have snaps, man.
That is great. I love that. That's your ministry, though. I think that's, I don't know, to me that's like an incredible ministry, touching you know, a touch in these kids' lives every single day. Yeah,
it really is amazing. And you come back and the growth, and you see you're getting their parents. I'm getting their parents now. I've been doing this 23 years. So I'm getting the parents I had their parents as kids. It's crazy.
It's bizarre. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just like, okay, I've been doing this that long. Wow. Yeah. You know, so, and I get a chance to share some of my music, but pretty much what I do at Santa Unified is about them and not about me. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of teachers know what I'm doing and my music, but I say, you know, if I share that about me and my life and all that, then it becomes more about me instead about them. And this is about them. This is about them learning the violin and them doing. So my thing is, what am I doing now? Not what I've done in the past or whatever. And then some kids will find my music, and that's fine. But I try to keep the two separate a little bit.
Right, right. I guess that's just, if it's sharing your passion or joy for music or whatever, that's cool, right? And What's like sort of the challenge of being a believer as a teacher in public school and all that, you know?
Well, I think there are a lot of challenges. You got to temper your conversations. There's a lot of things. As far as peer-to-peer, there are some things you do disagree with. And early on in my career, I learned that you can't fix everything and everybody, and sometimes when you have some disagreements, you have to let things go. Mm-hmm. You can't always fix everything, even with others that are believers, and you have to learn to let that go. As far as the kids go, you know, it's just always a matter of being understanding. And every day before I pull in, I say, Lord, help me to love these kids today. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it is when I'm in the thick of it. Mm-hmm. And it's just craziness. And it's easy to kind of come unglued with a kid when he comes up, oh, what time are we supposed to be here again? And not to go, I told you 1,000. You know? And those are the things. You can say, all it takes is one little comment to hurt them, and that can stick with them for a long time. It's to temper that.
Yeah.
And that's the big challenge that I have, especially as a male in this. You know, a lot of people say, I don't have the patience to teach. Well, you learn the patience. And when I put my teacher hat on, it's a whole different thing. You know, I realize what I'm dealing with. I'm dealing with kids here. And I've had it where a kid's come back to me 5 years later, and I saw him in intermediate school, and he says, I remember when you kicked me out of choir. I'm not bummed by it anymore, but I remember that. And I thought, okay. And, well, did you deserve it? Yeah, kind of. Mm-hmm. But then I'd say, you know what? I can tell that really bothers you, and I'm really sorry if I hurt your feelings on that. So I always remember that even the little things will stick with kids.
Yeah.
And you got to be real careful. And I'm not perfect. And I just, I try to communicate that to the kids. Look, I'm not perfect. And in fact, I tell them before the concerts, hey, if I get uptight at you, it's not you, it's me. It's my problem. The best thing you can do is just kind of take care of each other and know that if I say something to you, it's not your fault. It's on me. You know, it usually puts them at ease when they understand that I'm a human being. Because a lot of times, teachers forget. They get in a bad mood. They get grouchy. They don't tell the kids. And the kids,
Right. Ah, interesting. Okay, so then you've got this whole world. You're being a teacher and doing all this band stuff. Now, you're doing Altar Boys. Now, you played it for us a little bit of Altar Boys. Can we get a little bit more? Like something else?
What do you want? You got your head in the clouds. I try to look for something where the dreams cannot be found. What
Can I go on?
No, that's good. That's good. But what I'm really curious about, okay, so then is, what does now Alter Billy's sound like?
Okay.
You know, so what's like, kind of describe what's going on
you
there.
You know what? Alter Billy's was originally an idea to take the songs of the Alter Boys and make them rockabilly and just to play churches.
Okay.
It was just like a fun thing to do. My friend John Hollings kind of initiated this idea. I thought, okay, great. Yeah, we'll just kind of gig once a month and we'll just take Alter Boys songs. And that's what it started out to be. And then I started writing songs again.
Okay.
Oops. And then we started like church. We started playing street fairs and clubs and really getting in with the people. And there's a really neat rockabilly scene here in Orange County. So that's become a ministry for these guys.
So what does that sound like? Can we get a little taste?
Trouble up ahead, looking pretty bad, I'm still standing. Storm clouds are near, it's gonna be fierce, I'm still standing. When all hope is lost and it seems like the end, salvation is near with the stretch of your hand. Thought I would break, but I'm still standing.
Nice. Yeah,
there it is. Yeah. Here's the thing for me, Mike. You have such a distinct voice. Like, I know it. I heard you coming down the hall when you're over here, and that. But that voice for you. Let's rewind a couple years ago. You were losing your voice.
Yeah, and I went through a really tough period. About this time 2 years ago, I started having an issue with my voice, and I just thought it was cold. I got cold after cold after cold, January, February, March of 2017, and we were still doing concerts. I was still teaching. Probably teaching takes more of my voice than anything like that, and I couldn't get over it. Finally, I went to my specialist, voice specialist, and he looked down there. I had hemorrhaging vocal cords, and he said it was just a mess. And I had to go on an immediate vocal rest. And during the summer of 2017, I did everything to try to remedy this. Everything. Steaming, speech therapy, vocal rest where I wouldn't even talk.
I remember, like, we couldn't talk to you.
No. Well,
I did a lot of talking. Yeah.
And it was really weird. Like, I had this handicap, and it was funny. People would, you go in stores, and you couldn't talk, and people would talk louder, because they thought, I had to write things down. It was a real, I had gone through it before, 2002 and 2007, but I got over it. I knew what to do. Okay, I know the drill. I just stopped talking for a week or two. It remedies itself. I'm good. I couldn't get over this, guys.
Yeah.
I could not get over this. And so the naughty surgery word came up. I'm like, nope, not doing surgery, because I knew what would happen. And the doctor said, nope, you got to have surgery. You're never, ever, ever, ever going to get over this. And so on September 25th, 2017, I got surgery by Dr. Verma at UCI. And by the grace of God, I had one of the best surgeons in the world. People would fly all over the world to see him. And I got to tell you, back that story up a little bit. I had not shared a lot of this with Calvary at the time. And Pastor Dave had gotten up and one Sunday, I believe in July or August, and talked the message, and I'm probably paraphrasing it, was about sharing what's going on with your life and other, not being afraid. You know, I hear the stories of what people are going through at Calvary, cancer, and just horrible things. I'm thinking, you know, what I have is pretty pitiful compared to that. So I didn't share a lot because I did felt like it was a burden and my situation was small compared to others. But after Pastor Dave's message, I went up and you know, started sharing what was going on because I couldn't get over it. It devastated me. I got to tell you, I'm even talking to you guys right now and having a hard time. It blindsided me. It devastated me. Eric, I think you got, you know, I sent you some email sharing, and you got back to me and said that's pretty heavy. Man, I think I shared with you something.
I remember we had
too.
A conversation at the bookstore, and that was rough.
It was horrifying. It was one of the most difficult things. I couldn't get over it. It was like the rug was being. I didn't know what to do. Came to it where I thought, well, honey, I told my wife I'm going to have to retire early. I don't know what to do. And the biggest thing to me was not, why are you doing this to me, God? That wasn't it. Because you know what? we know that the rain falls on the righteous and the unrighteous. I know that.
Yeah.
It was, what do I do?
Mm-hmm.
Lord, what do I do? And I would go on long walks, and it's like, Lord, what do you want me to do? I don't know what you want me to do. Tell me what you do, and I'll do it. And I remember I was praying with someone here. I don't remember who, and I couldn't. I could only talk in a whisper. It was like, I could kind of talk like this, if you remember.
Yeah, I do remember. Yeah,
it was like, mm-hmm. if I could talk, and it was just, you know. And he said, eventually God's going to tell you what to do. And I just wasn't convinced, because it was such a convoluted web of knowing what to do.
Yeah. Mm.
And eventually it came up, I was on my walk, and I stopped, and I said, Lord, do you want me to have this surgery? And I was terrified by it.
Wow.
And I did. And by the grace of God, I got over that, and some neat things happened out of that.
Right, because then that led you into, it's crazy to think about.
It's crazy to think about.
What this last year or so has been since then.
Yes.
And I think that's probably the next story we need to tell, right?
Yes.
Is you...
It's like post-surgery.
Post-surgery, yeah.
It really was post-surgery, literally the next day. So,
oh, really?
Yeah, so in 1991, the Altar Boys started recording a record called No Substitute. We never finished. And we basically just stopped. And, you know, the band moved on, a lot of the guys moved away, and I went back to school, and, you know, it just took its natural course. I'm like, okay, we're not going to be doing that record. We started it. We didn't finish it. We kind of just tucked it away, and, you know, I was never...
And so started it means you had recorded some
recording
stuff?
Either? Yeah, recorded almost all the songs.
Wrote all the songs.
Wrote all the songs. Everything was pretty much done, between 91 and 93. And put it away. You know, I moved on to Clash of Cymbals, Altarbillies, Master, having kids, having my son Keith and my daughter Cammy, and just moved on with life. Then in 2017, people are talking to me about this record. And I'm thinking to myself, you guys are nuts. I can't even talk. You talk to me about a record?
Hmm.
And so, lo and behold, this led to that. I had to take 3 weeks off after my surgery. I thought, okay, I got nothing else better to do. Might as well take a look at this music that I recorded way back when. And so I got my tape player out, put it in, and started listening to it. I motioned Keith over, my son.
Yeah.
I said, pointed. I couldn't talk at the time. It was the day after my surgery. He's like, what is this? I wrote it down. This is the Altar Boys from 1991-93. He goes, this is really good, Dad.
And then tell a little bit that Keith, like, even is not just your kid, but he's got some chops himself, right?
Yeah,
like,
well, so. Keith, my son Keith not only plays the viola and the keyboards and the drums, loud drums, and guitar, but he's also found his way as a recording engineer, and he's currently pursuing that and doing very, very well at it.
Yeah.
So at the time, he listened to it and thought we had something here, and we just kind of took one step at a time, downloaded the songs digitally, sent them out to the guys. Just one little step, saying about the process of finishing this record. And by the grace of God, we finished No Substitute 25 years later. Added drums, bass,
and
vocals.
Isn't it? But it's this interesting, cool kind of like blend of the early recordings with new recordings, right?
Yes. So we put bass, drums, and I've spent 350 hours just on the recording process. Not counting the artwork, meticulous, as tedious. As I showed you, Matt, early on, I have a whole log of everything that I did.
Just day by day.
Day by day.
Here's the date.
Here's
this
the
what
date.
You did
you
on
can
that
look
day.
And here's what I did on that day, and here's what I accomplished, and here's the tracks I put in. And tedious, very tedious to record, but I just, like I said, I took one step at a time. It's anything I jumped into. I'm very pensive about moving and not moving too quick and into things, because, you know, sometimes when you move too fast, you wind up being in the wrong place, and before you know it, you're over your head.
Yep.
So we moved on this. We did a Kickstarter and found distribution and released the record in October. We had a record release party here at Calvary where 200 or 300 people attended, following in from all over the world. We sold out the House of Blues on September 16th, so it was amazing what God has done.
It was a great weekend.
And we just got voted by a classic contemporary music, the number 3 released album in 2018.
Wow.
Yeah, and our single went on number 1 on Christian Music Weekly. And this is a testament to the faithfulness of God. This isn't about what I've done, what the Altar Boys have done. It's what God has done through the group. And Eric, you attended the House of Blues date.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Matt, you were there with us at the release party. Yeah. So you guys were real up. And Eric, as a matter of fact, you came in about a year ago to listen to the early tracks and what we're doing. So you're very much, Eric was very much a part of this. And it even contributed to our Kickstarter. Thank you, Eric.
I did. I loved it, man. It was fun to listen to it in your little recording studio area in your house.
Doesn't take much for Keith. And the wizardry of Keith is he mixed it and he mastered it.
Yeah.
And just did an amazing job for a 21-year-old, 22 at the time. Yeah, 22 years old. So by the grace of God, I mean, just the whole story is just amazing from top to bottom.
And we were talking about, you know, some of the stories of like how Altar Boys music has impacted people's lives. Did this project help you to kind of get to hear more of those because you're reconnecting with old fans and stuff like that?
Yes, the stories. Okay. I mean, and the thing is, Jesus talked about your fruit and your fruit remaining. Many people that got in contact with us are now in the ministry.
Mm.
Okay? They're either pastors or youth pastors or somehow tied to ministry or missionaries. I mean, it's amazing. Going through account after account after account and trying to keep up with the amount of people. And again, at the time, I really had no idea. I knew we were playing big gigs. I knew people liked us, but I was like, it didn't computate in the middle of the whole, in the thick of the whole thing. I couldn't see the trees or the forest or the forest or the trees or the birds and the bees and the flowers and the trees and the moon up above and the thing called love, you know?
Sounds like a new song coming out, man. Here we go.
Well. Whoa. Better have a copyright on that one.
Yeah. That's amazing. I was thinking about just, at your show, actually, and even with this whole project, it's kind of like had me listen to some of the music again that maybe I hadn't listened to in a little while of your guys's. And it was like, I was so struck by how direct your lyrics are.
Direct. Yes.
You know?
That's the way we did it.
And yeah, talk about like, was that just you or like, I mean, you were just straight to the point of like, you need Jesus, Jesus or nothing kind of thing, you know?
And, early on.
And early on, stories in some of the songs were pretty direct.
Yeah, like the song like When You're a Rebel. As a matter of fact, I wrote When You're a Rebel back in 1985, I was done with it. I'm like, you know, when you're a rebel, the world is just so different from you.
Yeah.
When you're a rebel. I thought, man, I can't really say rebel. I don't care. You say when you're rebellious, you rebel against the you know, against God.
Yeah,
good.
That song.
And as a matter of fact, I brought the song to Lyle Castle out here at Calvary.
Yeah.
You know, I said, wow,
is this okay,
you know,
kind of thing?
Can I do this? And he's like, sing it for me. Well, Mike, it sounds like you're redefining rebel, what a rebel is.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? So when we first started out, we were direct, we were to the point. And I think at the time, culture was set up in such a way that you could do that. And it where culture's changed a little bit, or dynamics have changed a little bit. People have not changed a little bit. And I think, too, as we grew, and as I kind of went through the process, I changed just my approach lyrically.
Yeah.
The messages never change.
No,
but you grow as
no.
a lyricist.
Yeah, that makes sense.
You grow as a lyricist. And that's one of the things I tried to capture in those substitute. We had finished a record in 1989 called Forever Mercy. And it had done well. It was noteworthy. But it's not what I wanted.
Mm.
And what I wanted was a song, an album of direct tunes, particularly in the what you call the hooks, okay, the choruses.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted those to be direct so it would kind of tie everything together, but I wanted the verses to be sweet. That was my goal, and I think we accomplished that goal. It was a lot of work. You know, I probably spent on each song back in the day probably 30 to 40 hours per song. Something.
This day, like, Happy New Year, get back to work. And
yep.
I mean, there's a lot of effort that goes into that and intentionality.
I had a window. I had an opportunity. And a lot of times windows come by one time, and that's it. And that's what I tell my kids. That's what I told my kids. You got sometimes that one chance. God will give you that one window. And like when I got my master's, several things in my life. And you guys can look back in your life and anybody listening out there, opportunities that are lost and gone.
Yeah.
Windows, God opens. And it doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be easy, but he says, this is your window.
Right.
And if you don't take it, bye-bye. And I knew this was the window for No Substitute. I had 2 weeks off for winter break, and I knew I had to work, particularly while everyone was asleep. I mean, there were times I came in for a couple, working here at this church. I did my master's here at this church. I recorded 2 altar bellies tunes. I'd leave here sometimes at 2, 3 a.m. It'd be, I'd leave out here, be me and the little varmints running around outside.
The cockroaches.
You know? But sometimes you do what you have to do. I don't know how, by the grace of God, how I did it. I mean, looking back.
Yeah, because you're working your day job, you're being a husband and a father, and then you got to do that too, right?
Yeah, but I didn't stay up till 2 a.m. or do those late things when I had to work. You know, I know, it was only those times where I had off.
That's why it's New Year's Day and New Year's Eve.
That's right. And Christmas, and I think Christmas Eve, part of it too.
Wow, yeah.
Yeah, you just take what you can, you know what I mean? You're not going to write good songs being out on the golf course, folks.
There you go.
Ask me if I play golf.
And do you play golf?
No. Ask me if I have a camper.
Do you have a camper?
No.
Do you have a boat?
No. Do I have a music room?
Yes.
Yes.
I know that's true. That's amazing.
I'm not saying there's nothing wrong with those things, but that takes time.
Yep.
That, you know, and for me, for Mike Stand, those things aren't.
Yeah,
would not allow me to have the freedom to do some of the things that I knew God's called me to do.
That's right.
Yeah, that's the thing. I've been trying to encourage like our people to be praying like this chow prayer, right? Courage, heart, opportunities that God would give us that and words to say. And I feel like that's like God gave you this opportunity, and then you had to have courage to really step into it. But then you had to do the hard work.
The hard work. 350 hours of recording, and not counting doing the artwork and everything else involved in it. And I just kind of weaved it throughout my day as best I could. Or my, find those times where I could make it work. Yeah. It wasn't easy. And it was a cost.
This album and every album kind of seals in that's a part of your story, right? And you can look at this and say, let me tell you this story that happened.
What God did
in this album, where I was at in this album, where God was at with me in that place.
And no substitute. You got to realize those lead vocals are from me in 1991 and 93. And it really was not a professional recording like you go in the studio. We had to make do with what we had. But I put those vocals down like I was making a record. Because that's just the way I do it. That's the way Mike Stand does it. He does it as best he can, and always searching for excellence. Mm-hmm. And man, and dare I say perfection, that's where it gets me in trouble. But as much excellence as possible, because that's what God calls us to do.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. I was just thinking kind of even one of the last things of just any thoughts for people of Calvary that maybe they have an opportunity coming, or they have an opening of some sort that God has for them. Like, what's maybe a word for them about even the spiritual process to kind of dive into that opportunity?
I think it's different for everyone, but you've got to seize the moment when you see things coming your way, I'm sure there's things in my life that I probably shouldn't have seen. So I have the discernment. You know, if you're part of a small group, make sure people are praying for you. Make sure you have the right motives in what you're doing. You know, for me, I had this window. And, of course, I work with my son and my wife. We told her what she was doing. She was a part of it, too. You know, and I'm going back to school. I just knew I had to do something. And sometimes it's a matter of when you jump into an opportunity of saying, okay, I'm going to try this for a certain amount of time. Let me just see if it's a good fit or if it works. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
But check your motives. Check why you're doing it. Check where this is going to lead in the big picture as far as your life and how it affects others. And count the costs.
Yeah.
There's always costs to be counted. But like I said, you sometimes got one opportunity. So if something comes your way, you really got to consider it. Yeah. And sometimes you got to know when to hold them and know when to fold them.
Thanks, Kenny. Oh,
that's a good one, too.
I just actually listened to another podcast all about some of those guys that wrote that song. Anyway.
Yeah, that guy.
Yeah. Anyway, wasn't Kenny.
I don't know. It wasn't Kenny?
No.
I hope that's what you're looking for as an answer. I
mean, that's great. That's totally great. It's hard. It's different for all of us, and we have to just keep pursuing, I think, the Lord and seeking Him. And But I do love that sense of, it's kind of like the guy Henry Blackaby talked about, like, find where God's working and like join in with him, you know? Exactly. And this was God giving you an opportunity to like join in with that opportunity that God was giving
you. Didn't see it coming.
Yeah. So cool.
Did not see it coming. I mean, did not even for any of this thing. Didn't expect a music teacher.
Right.
Didn't expect to be playing music in my early 60s. Didn't expect to any of this. I really, really am blindsided by it. If you would have stepped back 30 years ago and said, this is where you're going to be, this is what you're going to go through, I would have said, what?
Yeah.
No way. And so the story of my life is all that God can do in spite of myself or ourselves. Because if God can do things through me, trust me, he can do things through anybody.
Yeah.
Because I feel like I'm the weakest of the weak, and he was poor pickings. You know, and me and David have a...
Yeah, you and David, Gideon, like all that, you know?
Yeah, I really honestly feel that. I'm not saying that it's the right answer. It's honestly what I feel, guys. Really, it's honestly what I feel, and that's from my heart, and I mean that. I, you know, by God's grace. I always say that, by God's grace, because it's the truth.
Right.
It really is the truth.
Well, we love you, and we love that you're Mike here, and you're Mike Sorrell's, not just Mike Stand, but you're...
Thank you, Eric. Thank you, Matt. I appreciate the time to share my story, such as it is. Maybe it's a long story. I don't know. I could go on, but maybe we're going to end this podcast pretty soon, because if I go on, I have too much to say, and I'll dig a hole for myself. Anyone to say?
Yeah.
I wrote that this afternoon.
Thanks, Johnny. I mean, Mike.
Well, there's nothing else to be said on that one. That was great.
I think that's it. Thanks, Mike.
Thanks again for joining us on the Calvary Life Podcast. If you enjoyed our show this week, don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening. If you want to learn more about Calvary Church or share any of your thoughts, check us out on our website at calvarylife.org or find us on one of our social media accounts. We're on Instagram at calvary_church, Facebook at Calvary Church of Santa Ana, and Twitter at Calvary Life.